Happy to be joined now by Shai Davidi of Sportsnet. Hey, Shai.
Hello, Mr. Ennis.
So let's start with the Alfred thing, which I imagine you're confirming. I mean, Ben Nicholson-Smith has confirmed it already, but I imagine you're hearing the same stuff, that he's going to be up for tonight's game.
Yeah, I mean, they kicked him around. It was a chance that he would have come up yesterday instead of Dwight Smith Jr. And there was some debate at the time, but ultimately they settled on Dwight Smith there, and then so he was the next outfielder in line. So when Darryl Siciliani got hurt, it sort of became the obvious choice. And look, I don't think this is going to be an extended stay. I mean, it could just be a day until Pilar returns, or maybe they'll pick him and give him a few more days until Smith recovers. But, you know, this is a roster that's going to get healthy relatively near future. So roster spots are seeing it going to start becoming a little bit more scarce.
But that's an interesting move, right? Like that they add him to the 40-man roster, that they've seen enough.
He's already on the 40-man roster.
Okay.
Add him this offseason.
All right. So, but that he is... he's going straight from AA to the major leagues, that he's not seeing AAA, that he has fewer than 150 plate appearances in AA, and this is his first year above A-ball. That's surprising to me. I shouldn't speak for you. Is that surprising to you that they would go in that direction?
No, I mean, I think based on all the options within the system, he's the guy who's playing the best right now.
Yeah.
You know, and Dwight Smith was a bit closer to the big leagues. And so I can understand why they ultimately settled on him, especially, you know, he brings something that they need, another left-handed bat, good contact guy, can do some things for you. But Anthony Alford has a chance to be an impact player. He's been, you know, a house of fire ever since the season started, just completely tearing things up. And you know, he's earned this. So again, is this mean he's up to stay from here on out? I don't think so. But again, you know, if he performs and you know the opportunity falls the right way, maybe this can turn into an extended stay. But right now, maybe this is just a little taste for him. And they were going to promote him to AAA Buffalo relatively soon anyway, and so maybe this just accelerates that timeline.
Yeah, it's exciting. I mean, it's not a move I anticipated, but it's a guy who has a high upside, obviously, and was drafted without the knowledge that he would take the route of professional baseball, right? As a football player, and that didn't exactly work out for him. So if I'm understanding you correctly, if he gets into these games today, or at least he gets into today's game, I mean, how big a sample size, how much of a run is he going to get before the Blue Jays decide whether to send him down? Is this just a one-time thing because Kevin Pillar is coming off that suspension tomorrow?
Well, I mean, someone's got to go down tomorrow, right? Either Dwight Smith, logically, either Dwight Smith or Anthony Alford. And so, you know, if they went with Smith in the first place, that would at least suggest that, you know, Smith might stay a little bit longer. Either way, you would figure that one of those two guys, whoever stays, ends up going down whenever Troy Tulowitzki is activated, and that's going to be relatively soon. So it's not going to be an extended stay, you would think, at this point. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it is going to be a small sample, but look, one of the reasons you have prospects is that in times of need, you call them up and let them do their thing. And so this is a time of need. It's not necessarily an extended time of need, but it at least in some small measure demystifies the big leagues a little bit for them if there's another opportunity down the line.
What did you think of the way the Blue Jays responded to Jose Bautista being hit in the top of the first inning yesterday, that was the end of it? Did that surprise you? Was that expected? I mean, obviously it worked out. You win the game 9-0. Is that how you thought it would play out?
Well, I mean, I think the Blue Jays handled it perfectly in a lot of ways. And, you know, I think Jose Bautista handled it with a lot of class. He understood that something was going to be coming. And even when, you know, the Braves sort of broke baseball convention and took two shots at him to hit him, you know, he still didn't react. He just put his head down, took his base, and the Blue Jays made them pay the way that you should, ideally under baseball. So I thought that was good. And really, I mean, you just look at the math. You know, up to that point in the series, seven Braves hitters had been hit by pitches compared to one Blue Jays hitter, and their best player just had his hand broken, and the guy that they hit bat flipped in a situation angering half their team. So, you know, I think you'd have to have your head in the sand a little bit to think that there wasn't going to be some sort of reaction.
Yeah.
And so, you know, everyone sort of knew that would be the end of it. The Blue Jays took their medicine and they played baseball the rest of the way.
They did. I like that stuff. I know not everybody does. I enjoy the code as long as nobody gets seriously hurt. And I guess that's a rather large caveat, but nobody did. And when you hit a guy in that spot, it's not generally an issue. But I am kind of confused at the way Major League Baseball, I guess, officiates this stuff, meets out discipline. Because, yeah, we saw an incident earlier this season where there was a pitch rejection in the first inning at the first sign of any intent, even though there clearly wasn't, in a breaking ball situation. Against the Orioles, Red Sox, against the Red Sox at Fenway Park between the Orioles and Red Sox. We've seen incidences where the umpire thinks they're seeing intent and they eject right away. Like, there's nobody on planet Earth that doesn't think Julio Teheran was intentionally throwing at Jose Bautista. Everybody understands that. But there's not going to be any supplemental discipline from that, is there, Shai?
No, and really, I mean, the home plate umpire, I think it was Paul Emmett last night. I mean, he basically gave the around two shots at it and said, "Okay, get it done and let's end this business." And you know, I think it depends really on the teams and their maturity and the way they handle it. And I think the Red Sox, the way they've handled the whole Manny Machado thing, have been a total embarrassment to themselves and to the code. I mean, they just won't stop. And you know, at some point you have to have some common sense and say, all right, it's over, let's move on. And it's tough to you know, to say like a Buck Showalter led team is the one that's taken the high ground, but seriously, that's what's happened there. So it's hard because the code, everybody reads it a little bit differently, sort of like the hockey code and like all the unwritten rules in any sport. You know, everybody's got their own interpretation of it. And you know, sometimes the wires can get crossed, and you know, umpires are in a tough spot. You know, they're there, they've got a split second to make a judgment, and they want to try to control the game and not have tempers boil over and have to deal with a brawl or anything of that nature. So it's a tough decision for the umpires. And, you know, I don't want to, you know, I don't think that people should be too harsh on them because it can be a tough job. But I thought the crew in the series with Jays and the Braves in Atlanta did a terrific job. Onora was really good in separating the Jays and the Braves on that Wednesday night game the two times the dugouts cleared and making sure that things didn't escalate. And I thought that was you know, something that in a large measure went unnoticed, but he deserves credit for that. And I think the same goes for last night. You know, everyone understood the situation. You know, they gave the Braves their shots, and they said, "Okay, that's enough. Let's play ball."
Yeah, and it worked out in the Blue Jays' favor, of course, a 9-0 victory over the Braves, salvaging the final game of that 4-game set. Talking to Shai Davidi, so who would have thunk there'd be so many issues coming out of 4 games against an interleague rival, a team you don't see very often? But yeah, we had a lot to talk about over these 4 games between the Blue Jays and Atlanta Braves, and yesterday. The talk before the game, of course, was about Kevin Pillar's the reaction to what Kevin Pillar did on Wednesday in the first game in Atlanta and the homophobic slur. What did you think of the reaction by both him and the team and the 2-game suspension? I felt it did need a suspension. There needed to be some discipline. I was worried there wasn't going to be some for a couple hours there, but yeah, I think the Blue Jays did the right thing. What did you think?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And I don't think there was ever a scenario where there wasn't going to be some sort of discipline. But there was a lot of work that went on behind the scenes from the early morning when Major League Baseball said that they were investigating it to, at that point, the Blue Jays getting involved in a lot of ways taking the lead. And unfortunately, the Blue Jays had some precedent to work off with the Yunel Escobar incident in 2012. And that provided a bit of a framework for the proceedings for everybody. You know, I think they looked at the two events I said, okay, there's some similarities there. There's an on-field use of a slur, different fashions. And so I think that you look at Pilar's situation, his wasn't a premeditated act the way Escobar's was, because Escobar would have had taken time to write the slur on his eye black. I mean, there was thought and effort put into that one. So I think that's where they ended up with the difference in the three games versus the two games. And Pilar was earnestly contrite and remorseful about it. And I think that was important because there was a genuine recognition that he'd hurt a lot of people's feelings and, you know, he'd done something that caused them upset. So I think all those things were important. But to me, the real judgment lies in what's next. And, you know, they both the Blue Jays and Pilar talked about, you know, wanting to make an effort to pull some good out of this. And now it's on them to make sure that they follow through.
Yeah, I imagine that's coming. And they alluded to as much. So Mark Stroman hits a home run. Again, there's a million things to unpack from these four games against the Atlanta Braves. That was a cool moment that it came back to back against Luke Miley, which had to be the least likely duo to ever hit back to back home runs. And you tweeted as much. It's ridiculous. I kind of laughed at, you know, when he first talked about, I think his first interleague games, talking about how he was a position player, and he played some in high school. Did he play some at Duke? I'm not even sure. But he had a high expectations for himself offensively. But when you can back it up like that, that's rather impressive.
Yeah, he actually played 90 something games as a position player at Duke. He had a couple home runs, but doing it in the big leagues in his, I think, maybe seventh or eighth plate appearance is. It's pretty remarkable, and it was pretty funny in a lot of ways. Just watching the reaction in the clubhouse and Jose Bautista kind of shaking his head, saying, "You know, we're never going to hear the end of this." And
yeah.
Marcus Stroman himself even acknowledging as much. But you know, credit to him for wanting to be competitive in the batter's box and not saying, "Hey, you know, this is something I do two or three times a year, and it's not my specialty. I'm not going to put a lot of effort into it." He wants to make an impact. And, you know, the fact that he was able to deliver a pinch hit double at a key moment for the Blue Jays earlier this season, I mean, those are the kind of little marginal benefits where, you know, you can add to a team and it can help make a little bit of a difference here and there. So you know, he puts a lot of effort and a lot of work into trying to make himself at least be reasonably competitive. And he certainly ran to the right pitch and did the right thing with it last night.
I think John Gibbons is done predicting when the walking wounded are going to return to this lineup. He said as much because, he was not exactly correct. He, like everybody else, well, I guess he set the expectation for everybody else that Troy Tulowitzki would be returning for Wednesday's game. He didn't. Got into another game in Dunedin yesterday, was 2-for-3 with a walk and played shortstop. Is there any indicator that he could be ready for tonight's game in Baltimore, or are they still looking for, you know, maybe one of these weekend games, or are they looking at Milwaukee for him?
That's a good question. I think it wasn't only John Gibbons who set the expectation on Troy Tulowitzki. You know, that was the plan for him to play three rehab games and then return Wednesday in Baltimore. And then one of those games got rained out, and they ended up slowing his progress for whatever reason. And now they're kind of been bum on what the next steps are. He played six innings yesterday. I wonder if they might try to get him up to nine and then bring him back at that point. So I'm not certain on when he's going to be back or when Josh Johnson is going to start a rehab or any of those things. But there are movements. You know, Russell Martin caught Francisco Liriano's bullpen yesterday in Atlanta. He continues to feel good, and I think he's pushing for a quick return. And I wonder if the Blue Jays might be a little bit extra cautious with him and perhaps hold him back until Milwaukee rather than activating him this week in Baltimore. But, you know, the guys are getting close, and certainly the Blue Jays can use the reinforcements.